been speaking from the Ramayana, like to offer some respects to Valmiki Muni, who is the author of Ramayana. Pujantam Rama Rameti Maduram Madurakshram Arudhya Kavita Ashagam Vande Valmiki Kokilam Valmikir Munisimhasya Kavita Vanicharinaha Shunma Ramakatanadam Kona Yanti Paramgatim. This verse essentially glorifies Valmiki Muni in two ways. This verse says, Kujantam Rama Rameti Maduram Madurakshram. Essentially, Valmiki Muni is singing the sweet glories of Lord Ram in the most amazing poetry. And such a person, he is called as Ahruya Kavita Shagam. He is considered to be sitting on a tree of poetry, Kavita Shagam, of which one of the branches is the Ramayana. And Vande Valmiki Kokilam, such a Valmiki, such a personality, we offer our respects to. So here, Valmiki Muni is compared to a Kokila bird, or a bird that sings very sweetly, a cuckoo bird. And then in the same verse, it compares Valmiki to a lion. Valmikir Muni Simhasya Kavita Vanicharinaha. Muni Simha means, Simha means lion, and Muni Simha means he is the king among lions. So there are two options for us, since we have to, Haribol, kindly put on all those lights. Put all the lights on except this one. Everything else is fine, because I want to make sure that the audience is awake. If everyone goes to sleep, it's a problem. My lights are on, off, there is no problem, because I can't go to sleep anyways. So, the volume may be a little up and down because of the structure of the hall. So, if you all really focus and pay attention, you will be able to hear every word. And if you all don't focus and pay attention, you will lose a lot. The way I am going to present is that throughout the whole presentation, there are going to be a lot of takeaways which you can apply in your personal lives. So my suggestion is that kindly focus and pay as much attention as possible so that you grasp the maximum. So Valmiki is called as a Muni Simha. Simha means lion, and Muni Simha means he is the king among lions, the king among the sages. And he is said to be roaming around in a forest of poetry, Kavita Vanicharinaha. Shrunva Namakata Anadan Konayanti Paramatini. Essentially, we offer respect to such a person, because by listening to the words of this person, by listening to Ram Katha that is narrated by Valmiki Muni, one reaches Param Gatim. That means one reaches the highest, one gets the highest destination, goes back to the spiritual world. So here one might wonder that, how can a person be simultaneously called a kokila bird or a cuckoo and a lion? And a cuckoo is very sweet in his singing and very delicate bird. And a lion is extremely powerful, and there is no sweetness in the roar of a lion. So the understanding is that Valmiki is called both a lion and a kokila bird because his poetry, the story of the Ramayana, gives us both aspects. One, it gives us sweetness of the story, the sweetness of the pastimes that are being narrated here, the sweetness of the poetry that is being narrated here. But in addition to the sweetness, there is a roar of important messages. There are powerful lessons that are also being narrated simultaneously. Most people who understand or know anything about the Ramayana, they know the superficial external story of the Ramayana, and most people think that we know Ramayana. But the fact is that unless you understand the deeper message that the Ramayana is trying to teach us, we really don't understand the Ramayana at all. And therefore, the way I am going to present the Ramayana is like this. I will be speaking the story of the Ramayana definitely, but in addition to the story, I will be speaking lessons from the story. Therefore, this book which is here is entitled as Ramayana, the Game of Life. Why it is called the Game of Life? Many people ask me that, you know, what is the meaning of this Ramayana, the Game of Life, you know. So I always say that people love games. People love to watch, play games. You know why? Because the excitement in a good game is that you cannot predict the result till the end. And most people love the excitement of a game. And especially those games that are absolutely unpredictable in terms of the result, those are the games people like to watch the most. But unfortunately, people don't want life to be a game because they want life to be very predictable. They don't want any twists and turns in life. They don't want any unpredictability in life. And they want the results to be very predictable and smooth. But unfortunately, life is the biggest game. You cannot predict the results at all. At any moment, there can be a twist and turn that life can change totally. Therefore, this book, Ramayana, the Game of Life, it is not just the story of the Ramayana, but it is about how to apply the story of the Ramayana in our life and how to handle the complexities and twists and turns of life in a way that is healthy. So having said all that, I would like to start the narration of the Ramayana. We are going to discuss the story of the Ramayana for the next 3 days. The section of the Ramayana that I am going to focus on and I am going to speak about for the next 3 days is a very, very tiny, small and almost a missed section of the Ramayana, you know. But I tell you, there is so much to learn from every bit of the Ramayana. So, I am going to speak the section from the early days of Lord Ram, the early childhood of Lord Ram, till the marriage of Lord Ram. Essentially, it's only a very small section of the Balakand of the Ramayana. Ramayana has 6 Kandas, and one of the Kandas, the first Kand is known as the Balakand. So the first book, so the series Ramayana Game of Life is going to come out in 6 volumes. And the first volume is only the Balakand. It is called as Rise of the Sun Prince. And the whole Balakand is from the pre-birth of Lord Ram till the marriage of Lord Ram. So in the next 3 days, I am going to cover the section from the early youth of Lord Ram till the marriage of Lord Ram. It's a very small section, but it's one of the most fascinating sections of the Balakand of the Ramayana. And I'm sure you will enjoy this story. So I straight take you all to Ayodhya, where Dasharatha Maharaj, the father of Lord Ram, is looking at his son. Ram at this point of time is 12 years old. It's very interesting that the Ramayana underplays the childhood of Lord Ram. If you study Krishna Leela, Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find Krishna's childhood has been explained elaborately. Practically, there are 30 chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam that talk about the childhood of Krishna. But the entire Valmiki Ramayana, only 10 verses are dedicated to the childhood of Lord Ram. You might find that is something very weird. Krishna's childhood is so much in detail and Ram's childhood nothing. There is a reason behind it. The reason is that Lord Krishna is known as Anubhav Pradhan and Lord Ram is known as Anushthan Pradhan. The reason Krishna is known as Anubhav Pradhan is because the role that Krishna plays in this world, whenever Krishna descends into the material world, the reason he comes for is to give us an experience of the spiritual world. Give us an anubhav of the spiritual world. And therefore, whatever he does is extremely attractive and extremely fascinating. When people hear the childhood pastimes of Lord Krishna, they love to be with Krishna. They love to associate with Krishna. And they are eager to develop the desire to go back to the spiritual world so that one can participate in these loving exchanges more and more. In today's world, I travelled around Mauritius and I saw that Bollywood is quite active here also, you know. And people love movies, people love fascinating, adventurous movies where, you know, you just can't understand what's happening, you know. sometimes the movies are so bewildering in terms of what they present, you know. Especially South Indian movies, Rajinikanth movies, if you all understand what it means. Something unpredictable. You know, one time Rajinikanth was running after three villains, and he had only one gun, and he had one bullet in that gun. Now, how do you kill three villains with one bullet, you know? So what he did was, he shot the bullet, and these three people were running three different directions. So he shot the bullet in the air, and behind the bullet he threw a knife. The knife went and cut the bullet into two halves, and the bullet went two directions, and killed two people, and the knife went and killed the third fellow. Now, this is Bollywood. This is what Tollywood, whatever you call it, you know. People love such things. Something that you can't believe, that is what people love. Krishna comes to do exactly that. What is the meaning of Leela? Another word, understanding of the word Leela. Leela means switch your head off and put your heart on. Turn your heart on. Leela means don't analyze. Don't ask how Krishna can enter into Bakasura's mouth. Don't think so much, you know. How Krishna can enter into Aghasura's mouth. Don't think so much. Just enjoy it. Therefore, Krishna is known as Anubhav Pradhan. He's come to give us an experience of the spiritual world. And Ram is known as Anushthan Pradhan. Anushthan Pradhan means he has come here to teach us how to live in this world. So, the Mahabharata is a book that teaches us how to deal with the world. Ramayana is a book that teaches us how to live in this world. And Bhagavad is a book that teaches us how to love God. So, essentially, the Ramayana underplays the childhood of Lord Ram. And right now, the whole scene is that Dasharatha is looking at his son, who is 12 year old now. And inside the heart of Dasharatha, in the heart of Dasharatha, a desire awakens. Dasharatha, he feels that this is the time that I should get Lord Ram married. And he desires that the marriage of Lord Ram happen. And he is not able to understand whom should he marry Lord Ram to. He calls for his ministry, his mentors or ministers, he calls all of them together. And he asks them, whom should we get Ram married to? Now he is of marriageable age. So when all the ministers come together and are analyzing the marriage of Lord Ram, suddenly something happens in the court that actually disturbs Dasharatha so much. In fact, it disturbs the whole mood, and it almost seems that this event that is going to happen in the court of Dasharatha is going to destroy the desire of Dasharatha. Is going to destroy the very desire that Dasharatha has of getting Ram married. Everything that happens in our life is a manifestation of our past desires. But many times when opportunities come into our life, we see opportunities as disturbances that are come to destroy the desire. In fact, many times when we don't focus on seeing how everything that comes into our life is an opportunity that can actually uplift us, we tend to lose those opportunities and look for something else that is not yet come. In fact, human being is never satisfied with what is happening in his life. He's always wanting something that is not happening in his life. He wants something else, waiting for another opportunity to come. So therefore, unless we are really vigilant, we fail to recognize the opportunity that comes in our hand and we throw it away. Just like that. One time there was a man who was searching, who came to know about a touchstone. And this man, he came to know the qualities of the touchstone. And he realized that the touchstone is something that you touch any object, that object turns into gold. So this man was really inspired to find a touchstone. And he started looking around the whole, you know, wherever he could find his touchstone. And finally he found a book. And in this book it was written, how to recognize a touchstone. Now there are hundreds of stones lying down here and there. You know, how will you recognize this is a touchstone? So this book said, when you touch any stone, the stone is cold, generally cold in nature. But when you touch a touchstone, the touchstone is warm. That is how you recognize which is a touchstone. So this fellow went to the seashore where there was a lot of stones and pebbles lying down. And he started picking up stones to feel them, whether it is cold or warm. And every time he would pick up a stone, feel it is cold, he would throw it into the ocean because he didn't want to pick up the same stone again. He kept doing that for years and years and years. Finally, one day, he picked up a stone and the stone was warm. He said, "Wow, I found a touchstone." But because so many years he has been practicing throwing it, he threw this one also into the water. Lost it forever, you know. So many times in life, opportunities come as obstacles. And when opportunities come as obstacles, we think of them as obstacles which are coming to destroy our desires. And then we completely lose them. Here we find that Dasharath, he is sitting with this group of ministers and discussing about the marriage proposal of Lord Ram. Suddenly, a guard who is standing on the door of the palace, of the courtroom, he comes running in. And this man, he is sweating, he is in anxiety, he is practically shivering. As soon as he comes in, everybody in the court understands that something is wrong with this person. So they ask him, Dasharath asks him, "What happened?" This man, he says, "My dear king, outside the courtroom, there is a sage who has come. And this sage is anger personified. Practically, this sage is so angry and furious that it looks like he's going to burn down the whole kingdom." So, Dasharath asked him, he pacified him and he told him, "Don't worry, tell me what is the name of the sage." And this man, he said, "The name of the sage is Vishwamitra." And as soon as Dasharath and all the ministers and the people in the court heard the name Vishwamitra, everybody got up. Because that name, it brought in so much reverence in these people. This person, this sage Vishwamitra, was an exalted personality. But the guard, when he saw the reaction that the name of this sage had on people, he understood that he made a big mistake. You know? So essentially, the guard was looking at Vishwamitra externally. He was looking at Vishwamitra from the perspective that here is a angry sage who is not dressed properly also, and who is seems to be a beggar who has come over here to beg something. So the guard looked at Vishwamitra as a disturbance to the peace of the kingdom, disturbance to Dasharath's tranquility. But as soon as all the others, the ministers, they heard the name Vishwamitra, they do not look at him as a disturbance. They looked at him with reverence. You know why? Because Dasharath and all the ministers, they knew who Vishwamitra was. They did not see him, but they knew who he was. The guard, he saw Vishwamitra, but he didn't know who he was. So essentially, knowledge, it helps one go beyond external packaging and appreciate the value inside. The Mahabharata talks about a very interesting story about how in this world, people are fascinated by the external packaging and not really bother about the internal content. There was a sage whose name was Uttanka. And this sage, he had got a benediction from Lord Krishna that whenever this man remembers Krishna, Krishna will appear in front of him and fulfill his desire. So Uttanka once had gone to a desert, and this was a parched land, practically no water at all. So he felt thirsty. So he closed his eyes and called out to the Lord, "My dear Krishna, please give me some water." And when he opened his eyes, next to him there was one man standing. Very shabby looking man with torn tattered clothes, dirty disheveled hair, and in his hand he was holding a pot filled to the brim with water. But the pot was dirty, the water inside was filthy. Uttanka, he got annoyed. He actually started chastising Krishna. He said, "My dear Lord, what are you doing? I asked for water and this is what you sent me." And when he started cursing Krishna like this man also disappeared. So then Krishna spoke. Krishna told him, "My dear Uttanka, because you prayed and asked for water, I actually fought with Indra, the king of the heavens, and made him get you not water but celestial nectar. But unfortunately, Indra didn't want to give it to you. So he came in the wrong package. He packaged himself like a beggar, and the water that he got, which was supposed to be selected nectar, he made it look as if it was dirty water. If you had only faith in me, understanding that I would not just reciprocate with you in this way, you would have just taken that. But because you saw from an external point of view, you did not see the content, you only saw the external packaging. Therefore, you got bewildered. In this world, people love external packaging. Here is a picture of one girl. This girl's name is Lizzie Valazuez. And you will be shocked to know that this girl is branded as the world's most ugliest woman. Can you imagine a 16-17-year-old girl being branded as the world's ugliest woman? All over the social media, in her college and school, practically all over, it's been declared world's ugliest woman. How will it feel? It's not something which is, you know, nice to be a part of. This girl suffers from a very rare genetic disorder due to which she just cannot acquire any body fat. Zero body fat. And practically, she was supposed to have died many years back. But just because of sheer power of the mind that this girl has, she is still alive. So this girl, you know, from an external point of view, from an external content point of view, nothing. The external packaging is absolutely the wrong one. But from an internal content point of view, this girl has so much strength that actually she started connecting with all youngsters of her age, inspiring them with self-confidence, inspiring them to have faith in themselves. And she actually became an author of 2 books when she was 23 years old. So, and so many youngsters of her age who lack self-confidence, when they look at her, who apparently externally seems to have nothing, but internally, because she has a lot of strength, they derive a lot of faith from her. So here, Vishwamitra, from an external point of view, the god was analyzing Vishwamitra. But from an internal point of view, Dasharatha knew who Vishwamitra was. And Dasharatha and all his ministers ran outside to the courtroom, to the door of the courtroom. And they welcomed Vishwamitra Muni. And Dasharatha brought Vishwamitra Muni in and offered him a seat. And Dasharatha started speaking to Vishwamitra Muni about what his feeling was on seeing Vishwamitra. Dasharatha gave him 4 examples to show or to convince Vishwamitra how he feels and what kind of joy he experiences now on seeing him. The first example he says is that, I am feeling the joy of seeing you as if I have got celestial nectar, the nectar of immortality. What kind of a joy a person will get if he gets the nectar of immortality? That is the joy I am feeling. Then Dasharatha felt that this is not the best example. He gave another example. He said, I am feeling the joy that a person experiences when he gets rain after a prolonged period of drought, when there is no rain for a long period of time, and finally rain comes. What joy a person will experience? That is the joy I am experiencing. Dasharatha felt that is also not the best example. Then he gave another example. He said, just like a person who has regained lost treasure, the joy that he experienced, that is the joy I am experiencing. And finally he said, that also not the best. Then he gave one example that he felt really satisfied by. He said, just like a person who has not had a son for a long period of time, finally when he gets a son, what is the joy he experiences? That is the joy I am experiencing on seeing you. Dasharatha, these 4 examples that he gave, are all experiences that Dasharatha had in his life. He had gained the celestial nectar. He had experienced a prolonged period of drought and he overcame that. He regained lost wealth and he also didn't have a son for a long period of time and finally got a son. So, Dasharatha apparently is welcoming Vishwamitra Muni with sweet words. So, sweet words of gratitude are the best welcome drinks. So, Dasharatha started calling Vishwamitra Muni as a place of pilgrimage, walking. He said, my dear sage, you are like a place of pilgrimage that is walking. The place of pilgrimage has come to my place. Essentially, why are saints, sadhus called as places of pilgrimage? Why do we go to a pilgrimage place? Why do we go to Vrindavan? Why do we go to Ganga Talav, you know? Why do we go to any place of pilgrimage? The reason we go to places of pilgrimage is not so much because of the place itself, but it is because of the great saintly people who reside there, and they are responsible for holding the Lord in their heart. And because these great saintly people hold the Lord in the heart, the place becomes a place of pilgrimage. And therefore, when Vishwamitra Muni has come to Dasharath all the way, Dasharath feels that a place of pilgrimage has come walking to him. And Dasharath, he is glorifying Vishwamitra in this way. Then Vishwamitra Muni, he asks Dasharath two questions. Apparently, in the Valmiki Ramayana, if you just go through this section and you see the two questions that Vishwamitra Muni asks Dasharath, one may not even think twice what is the internal deep meaning of these questions. Therefore, the Ramayana is considered to be a hidden treasure house, where in every small nook and corner there is unlimited amount of treasure hidden. But to recover, to find the treasure, we need guidance of the Acharyas. Just like in India, we have the Triveni Sangam, Prayag, which is the place where Ganga, Yamuna and Saraswati rivers meet. And the confluence of the three rivers is considered to be very auspicious. Whenever there is a confluence of the three rivers, that place becomes very auspicious. But essentially, if you study, if you see carefully, you can see Ganga very clearly, you can see Yamuna very clearly, but you can't see Saraswati, because Saraswati actually has no physical presence in the world now. But then you might say that, come on, then why do we call it Triveni Sangam? Why do we say that the three rivers come together over there? The fact is that Saraswati river comes exactly at the meeting point between Ganga and Yamuna, from within. Saraswati is Gupta, externally not seen, but from within Saraswati is very much there. And to have an understanding of the Saraswati river that you can't see, you have to learn to see with faith. And when you learn to see with faith through the eyes of great Acharyas, through the eyes of the great devotees, then we can see the hidden Saraswati river. Similarly, within the folds of the Ramayana, within the story of the Ramayana, there are so many hidden Saraswatis. Saraswati is knowledge. Saraswati river indicates education. So there are so many hidden messages within the layers of the Ramayana. To be able to unhide them, to be able to understand them, and to be able to see them, we need to have faith in the Acharyas who can reveal these hidden messages. So essentially, Vishwamitra Muni asks two questions. And the two questions that Vishwamitra Muni asks are the essence of what good governance is. If Dasharath can answer these two questions properly, that means Dasharath's governance model is perfect. And if Dasharath cannot answer these two questions properly, then there is a defect in the governance of Dasharath. So these two questions of Vishwamitra Muni contain the secret of what good governance is. The first question that Vishwamitra Muni asks is that whether Dasharath has conquered his enemies and whether his enemies are submissive to him. And the second question that Vishwamitra Muni asks is that whether Dasharath was doing his duties to God and society properly. Now, apparently you might say, what is the big deal? These two questions seem to be very simple. Nothing big in it. But let us see how these two questions of Vishwamitra Muni have answers to the perfect model of governance. The first question that Vishwamitra Muni asks is whether he had conquered his enemies and whether his enemies are submissive to him. Here, Vishwamitra Muni is talking about two enemies. One, the external enemy of the kingdom. And second, the internal enemies of the king. Vishwamitra Muni is asking Dasharath whether he has conquered both his enemies. The external enemies, which are other people who are attacking the kingdom, and internal enemies, which are the six vices: lust, anger, greed, pride, envy and illusion. And essentially, Vishwamitra Muni is saying that conquering these enemies is very easy. Conquering external enemies is very easy. And conquering internal enemies is very, very easy. But keeping them submissive is very difficult. You may conquer lust for 10 minutes. After 10 minutes, lust will come up again. You may conquer anger for 2 days. After 2 days, anger will come up again. So essentially, Vishwamitra Muni's question is, it is not just whether you have conquered the external and internal enemies, but whether these two enemies are actually submissive to you. And therefore, the answer to the second question is how the internal enemies can be kept submissive. The second question that Vishwamitra Muni asks is that whether Dasharath is dedicating his body, mind and words for the service of God and society. If the king dedicates his body, mind and words for the service of God and society, then and only then the internal enemies of the king can be kept submissive. So by answering these two questions, whether the enemies of Dasharatha are conquered and are submissive, and whether Dasharatha is doing his service to society and God effectively, Vishwamitra Muni is actually giving us the model of good governance. The Bhagavad Gita starts with the word dharma kshetre kuru kshetre, and it ends with the word ma, yatra yogeshwara krishna tatra padam dharudara tatra shri vijaya bodhi dhruva nitir matir mama. It ends with the word ma. So it starts with the word dha and ends with the word ma. The 700 shlokas that are in between teach us the concept of ra. So the whole Bhagavad Gita, the 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita, are essentially meant to teach us how to follow a life of dharma. And what is the meaning of dharma? Dharma essentially means following one's constitutional duties. So here, Vishwamitra Muni is asking Dasharatha, are you following your duties properly to God and society? If you are following your duties properly to God and society, then you will be able to keep your internal and external enemies submissive and conquer them. So Dasharatha, he was so happy seeing Vishwamitra Muni and having Vishwamitra Muni's presence in his life, that Dasharatha, he actually started talking to the sage and speaking his heart out. Dasharatha told the sage, my dear sage, I want to please you. And he got so carried away by the desire to please Vishwamitra Muni that he told Vishwamitra Muni, my dear sage, I will give you anything you want. Just ask what you want. Why have you come here? Whatever you want, I'll give it to you. Many times the desire to please somebody else is good. But when you promise something, you have to also remember what your personal capacity is. The quality of speech is a very important quality for a human being. It is said the tongue is only 2 inches long and it has no bones. But the tongue has a capacity to break all the bones if you speak the wrong things, you know. So essentially, Krishna speaks in the Gita about what are the qualities of speech that one should have. He says, Anudvayam karam vakyam, satyam priyam hitam chaya, swadhyaya vasanam chayava, vanmaya tapo uchyate. What is the austerity of speech? Essentially, Krishna says that 5 things constitute good speech. The first thing is anudvega karam. That means the speech that whatever you speak from your mouth should be non-agitating. You should not agitate others. The second thing is that the speech should be satyam, truthful. Then priyam means it should be pleasing to others. And hitam means it should be beneficial to others. And then finally, swadhyaya means it should be upheld by the scriptures. So Dasharatha so far had spoken words that were pleasing, that were beneficial, that were upheld by the scriptures, and that were non-agitating to Vishwamitra Muni. The question now is, Vishwamitra Muni wants to know whether he has spoken words that were truthful. So, when a tiger, before the tiger jumps, the tiger bends his hind leg and then it jumps forward, you know. So similarly, before the words jump out from our mouth, we should give the words a thoughtful bent of mind. And only when we speak, we think and then speak, those words will be effective and the words will be actually worth. Unfortunately, in today's world, people speak anything. Yeah, people don't think. People speak and then think whether I spoke the right thing or wrong, you know. That's the nature of today's world. And people like to just show off so much, just speaking about all the good that they have done and about themselves. That is the nature of today's world. One time there were 3 friends that were discussing and each one wanted to prove who is better than the other. Essentially, this is what happens in colleges, you know. Everyone is trying to prove that they are superior. The first friend, he said that my father is an archer. He shoots with a bow and arrow. But he is so fast that before the arrow reaches the destination, my father reaches the destination. The second one said, so what? You know, my father, he shoots with a gun. And before the bullet reaches the destination, my father reaches the destination. The third fellow said, so what? My father is a government servant. Office gets over at 5 o'clock, he reaches home at 2 o'clock. Much before, you know. So people, they love to speak anything. They don't think so much before speaking. And most people who don't think before speaking, they end up in trouble. Because the quality of speech actually defines a person. It is said, you cannot recognize a fool till he opens his mouth. And the moment he opens his mouth, you understand that person is a fool. So essentially over here, Vishwamitra Muni, Dasharatha was just speaking, making promises. He told Vishwamitra Muni, I'll give you anything you want. So Vishwamitra Muni, he asks. Before he asks something, he defines his own problem. He tells what he's going through. The word Vishwamitra means, Vishu means world and Mitra means friend. Vishwamitra means the person who is the friend of the world. So Vishwamitra Muni was performing a sacrifice, a yajna. And this yajna that Vishwamitra Muni was performing was meant for the welfare of the world. But unfortunately, every time he was doing this yajna, so this yajna was in such a way, was created in such a way that Vishwamitra had to take a oath, he had to take a promise. First promise he had to take was of silence, not to speak at all. He had to keep mourn throughout the yajna. And the yajna lasted for 6 days. And the second thing that Vishwamitra had to do was, not just he had to remain silent, but he had to restrain himself from anger also. He could not get angry also. So, whenever Vishwamitra was performing this yajna for the welfare of the world, there were two demons. One was named Marich and the other was named Subahu. These two demons, they were constantly waiting for Vishwamitra Muni to perform this yajna. And exactly when the yajna is going to get completed, they would come and throw all kinds of obnoxious things into the yajna and destroy the entire yajna. Vishwamitra could not speak anything and he could not get angry. Why? Because he had taken a vow about it. That's when his yajna can be completed. So often, we are thrown in situations where people take advantage of our principles. They throw false allegations at us. They throw insults at us. And because we retain certain principles in life, we can't counteract them at all. How do we equip ourselves with people who throw negativity at us? How do we equip ourselves against people who throw insults at us? Here, Vishwamitra is teaching us. So, Vishwamitra, he followed principles, he had taken a vow, and therefore he could not counteract these demons, though he had the power to do it. What did he do to actually counteract the demons? Because he could not do it, he came to Dasharatha to ask for assistance. So whenever we are in a situation where we are trying to follow our principles, but there is somebody who is trying to destroy, you know, our following of the principles, we need to take help of somebody who can actually protect us. So Vishwamitra Muni tells Dasharatha, he asks what he wants. He tells Dasharatha, my dear Dasharatha, these two demons are harassing me like everything. I only want one thing from you and nothing else. Dasharatha asks, ask me, I'll give you anything. And Vishwamitra Muni says, give me your son Ram. And as soon as Dasharatha, he hears this, he collapses. Dasharatha faints practically. And Dasharatha, he feels at this point of time, he feels that when a blind person, somebody who's blind from birth, suddenly in between, a blind person gets vision. And after getting vision, he loses the vision again. How does a blind person feel? That is the same way that Dasharatha is feeling at this point of time. Dasharatha, he did not have children for a long period of time. Finally, after a long period of time, Dasharatha got a son, got 4 sons. And now, the person whom he really appreciated and loved the most in his life, that person is being taken away. So Dasharatha is really feeling hurt over here. Dasharatha tells Vishwamitra Muni that, my dear sage, Ram is not even 16 years old. Now at this point of time, you might wonder that why is Dasharatha saying that Ram is not even 16 years old? Many people, when they hear this statement of Dasharatha, they conclude that Ram is 16. Many commentators of the Ramayana, when they hear this statement of Dasharatha, they conclude that Ram is 16. But actually the fact is that Ram is 12 at this point of time. But why did Dasharatha say that Ram is 16? He is not even 16. The reason Dasharatha says that is because for a person to go to war, for a person to go to a fight, a person needs to be at least 16 years old. So here Dasharatha is telling Vishwamitra Muni, my dear sage, my son Ram is not even 16. So he is not qualified to fight. He is not qualified to go for a war. So somehow Dashrath is now trying to win over Vishwamitra Muni in argument and trying to somehow or the other convince him, don't take Ram with you. He has made a promise, but now he is somehow or the other trying to get out of that promise. So Dashrath tells Vishwamitra Muni, my dear sage, Ram is Rajiva Lochana. He uses this word to describe Ram, Rajiva Lochana. What is the meaning of the word Rajiva Lochana? Rajiva Lochana means the one who has eyelids. Eye is like a lotus petal. That is the meaning of the word Rajiva Lochana. But why does Dasharath use the word Rajiva Lochana here? The reason is because he wants to make a point to Vishwamitra Muni. He tells, my dear sage, Ram's eyes are like a lotus petal. What is the property of a lotus petal? The property of the lotus petal is that as soon as the sun sets, the lotus closes. So he says, Ram's eyes are like the lotus petal. As soon as the sun sets, Ram goes to sleep. He's a small boy. He doesn't wake up in the night. As soon as sun sets, he goes to sleep. And these demons are all nocturnal. They only wake up in the night. So essentially, Dashrath is telling that those who love to wake up in the night and sleep during the day, they are something else. And those who sleep as soon as the sun sets, they are something else. Dashrath is telling, my dear sage, Ram is Rajiva Lochana. He will go to sleep as soon as the sun sets. Your demons will come in the night after the sun sets. What will he do? He'll be sleeping when the demons come. Vishwamitra Muni, when he hears this, he tells Dashrath, Ram is Rajiva Lochana. He also uses the same word. But here, when Vishwamitra uses the word Rajiva Lochana, it means totally different thing. He says, yes, Ram is Rajiva Lochana. What is the property? Another property of the lotus is that when the sun shines, the lotus opens completely. So he says that Ram is Rajiva Lochana, his eyeballs are like the sun. As soon as the eyeballs look at the demon, stare at the demon, the lotus petal like eyes of Lord Ram, they open up completely. His eyes are like the sun, and the sun extinguishes darkness. And as soon as Ram opens his eyes, the entire darkness which is compared to the demonic forces will get eliminated. So here both of them are using the same word, but they actually meaning something different. Sanskrit is like this. It's a very beautiful language. It's like gold. You can melt the gold and mold it into any form, any shape, right? So Vishwamitra Muni, unfortunately Vishwamitra Muni and Dashrath, their visions are totally different. So Dashrath, his vision was influenced by love and attachment to his son. And Vishwamitra Muni's vision was influenced by knowledge and his devotion to Lord Ram. Dashrath was telling Vishwamitra Muni that, my dear sage, don't take Ram with you. He is not even 16. He is not qualified to fight. He will go to sleep when the demons come. Better I come with you. And I will not come alone. I will get my entire army. I will get the Ayodhya army to protect your sacrifice. Don't worry. Vishwamitra Muni says, no, I only want Ram. The problem here is, Dashrath was thinking about quantity and Vishwamitra Muni was thinking about quality. Dashrath was saying, I'll come with my entire army. Vishwamitra was saying, no, I only want one person, Ram. What was the entire Mahabharat war? The entire Mahabharat war was essentially quantity versus quality. Arjuna, he chose Krishna alone, without any resources, without any weapons, without any army. And Duryodhan chose Krishna's army with unlimited powers, the Narayani Sena that was practically undefeatable in the entire universe. Duryodhan chose that. So in spite of having an entire Narayani Sena, having much more in quantity, the Kauravas had 11 Akshayani Senas and the Pandavas had 7 Akshayani Senas. In spite of Duryodhan having much more, he was still fearful. And Arjuna, in spite of having much lesser, he was still satisfied and happy. Same thing with Dashrath here, in this particular situation. Exactly the same thing. Dashrath, he was talking about quantity. And Vishwamitra Muni was talking about quality. Dashrath, he underestimated the power of his son. Because when there is strong attachment, you tend to undervalue people. There are so many parents who stop their children from pursuing their dreams because they have chosen for them a path of less risk. But unfortunately, what they don't foresee is that they risk an unsatisfied child. So many parents make perfect plans for their children from the beginning till the end of their life. They make perfect plans. But unfortunately, they want a risk-free life for their child. But many times, children have their own natures. Children have their own desires. Children have their own, needs to be fulfilled. In terms of trying to give them a risk-free life, they risk creating an unsatisfied child. So Dasharath, he owned Ram. He owned a diamond. Ram was like a diamond. But unfortunately, Dasharath did not know the value of the diamond. Vishwamitra Muni, he was a teacher. Dasharath was a father. The teacher, he did not own the diamond. The teacher did not have the diamond. But unfortunately, the teacher, he could see the hidden talents in Ram. And he knew how to polish the unpolished diamond. When one takes risks in life, the risk may seem to be very complicated. But essentially, the risk actually helps us achieve greater things in life. There is a very interesting verse in the Niti which says, Gamyate yadi mrigendra mandire, labhyate kari kapola moktikam. Jambukshare gatam chakrapyate, vatsapuccha khara charma kandam. This verse says, Gamyate yadi mrigendra mandire. If you go to the abode of a lion, dangerous. If you go to the den of a lion, very dangerous. You might lose your life. That's a risk that you take. But it says, Gamyate yadi mrigendra mandire, labhyate kari kapola moktikam. But if you go taking the risk, there is a possibility you might get the rare diamond that is on the head of an elephant. 1,000 elephant has a diamond on its head. And that elephant may be possibly killed by a lion because lions keep killing elephants. So this verse says, if you go to the abode of a lion, it is very risky. But you may get the rare diamond that is there on the head of an elephant. But Jambukshare gatam cha prapyate. Jambu means Jambukshare. This refers to a fox or a jackal. It says, if you go to the abode of a jackal, no risk, no problem at all. You will not, there is no danger to your life. But what will you get there? Vatsapuccha khara charma khanda. You will get tail of a calf or a skin of a donkey. Useless. What do you do with those things, right? So when you take less risk, you may not lose anything, but you will not get anything also. But if you take more risk, you may lose something valuable, but you may gain something more valuable also. Like many people, they fear coming to the Hare Krishna movement. Why? Very risky. You come over here, you lose so many things. You lose your hair also, yeah? So people feel that, very dangerous to come over here. But then, if you take that risk, what will you get? You may get something extremely rare. So essentially, choosing a path of less risk is safe, but choosing a path of more risk is advantageous. So Dasharath, at this point of time, he was not able to see that Ram going into Vishwamitra Muni is going to be for the advantage of Ram. But unfortunately, Dasharath could not see this. He fell at the feet of Vishwamitra Muni and he started crying. Because he realized, no point in discussing with this sage. This sage is too powerful in his arguments, So might as well I fall and cry. So he fell at the feet of Vishwamitra Muni and started crying like anything. Please don't take Ram. Vishwamitra Muni got angry now. Because he realized that Dasharath is just not understanding. And Vishwamitra Muni, he got up. And in anger, he started speaking to Dasharath. He said, I know who Ram is. You have no idea who Ram is. And he says, you have no idea about the power of Lord Ram. He says, what to speak of me? Ask Vasishtha and any of the sages. All of them will vouch my opinion. Now, the reason Dasharath, Vishwamitra Muni said this is because Vishwamitra Muni and Dasharath and Vasishtha, they had a lot of tips in the background. There is an entire section of the Ramayana which talks about the fight between Vishwamitra Muni and Vasishtha. And it is unbelievable that Vishwamitra Muni and Vasishtha, after that, after such a big fight, they agreed on any one point. The Vishwamitra Muni is telling Dasharath over here, this one thing both of us agree on. that Ram is extremely powerful and he is not an ordinary person. You ask Vishwamitra, you ask Vasishtha also, Vishwamitra says. And then Vishwamitra Muni tells Dasharath that you are a king, you are sitting on a throne and you have a crown on your head. So therefore, you are thinking that Ram is your successor and you need to protect him. But he says, Vishwamitra Muni says, I am a sage. I am sitting at the feet of God. I am not sitting on any throne. And I don't have a crown on my head. I have jata, I have hair, you know, matted hair on my head. And for me, Ram is not a successor whom I have to protect. Ram is a goal that I have to achieve. So, Vishwamitra Muni looking at Dasharath and thinking that Dasharath is thinking of Ram to be his own son, born from the womb of his own wife. Vishwamitra Muni tells Dasharath that, don't worry, you stay with Ram and you'll be happy with your family. I'm going. But Vishwamitra Muni didn't speak these words smiling. He spoke these words with intense amount of anger. The same words, when you speak with different ways, it means different things. Vishwamitra Muni is telling Dasharath, don't worry, you'll be happy with your family. I'm going. When he spoke these words in anger, actually practically, Vasishtha and all the sages, and including Dasharath, they really started shaking. Anger sometimes can be used as a wake-up call to against people who have selfish desires. Vishwamitra Muni used anger to wake up Dasharath. Ram was not Dasharath's personal property, but Ram was the hope for the world, the ray of hope for the world. And Dasharath was treating Ram as his personal property. So, many times, people want to use anger, but unfortunately, they get used by anger. One time, Alexander the Great, he was in India, and he was in a small village in India, and he heard about one particular sadhu, one sage, and he wanted to see this man. So he sent one of his soldiers to the sage and told him to get the sage to meet him. So this man went to the sage, and he called him. The sage said, I don't go anywhere. Whoever wants to see me should come to me. So this soldier came to Alexander and told him, the sage doesn't want to come, you have to come to this place. Alexander was extremely angry. He immediately went to the house of the sage. He stopped outside the hut and he sent one of his soldiers in and he told him, get the sage out. The sage told the soldier same thing, I don't come out. Whoever wants to see me should come inside. And now this man was boiling with anger because nobody had ever told like this to him. This was wood his sword and ran inside the hut of the sage to kill him. And then the sage, as soon as he saw Alexander, he saw him boiling, he saw him angry, he saw him really like fire. The sage was very cool. He said, welcome servant of my servant. Now Alexander got really wild. He said, first of all, he is insulting him and not coming to his palace. On top of that, he is not coming out of his house also. And now over here, after he enters, he is calling him servant of his servant. This fellow practically owned half the world at that point of time. And this sage over here is a beggar. He's calling him servant of his servant. So Alexander, he was going to kill him. But before he killed him, he wanted to ask him, why did he say that? So he went and asked him, I'm going to kill you. But before I kill you, first tell me, why did you call me servant of your servant? The sage said, it's very simple. I have conquered anger. And anger is my servant. I use my servant whenever I want. But you have not conquered anger. You are the servant of anger. Therefore, you are the servant of my servant. So that's when Alexander understood that anger is something that should be used at our will. It should not be something that overpowers us completely. So here, Vishwamitra Muni is using anger constructively to wake up Dasharath. So when Vasishtha, the guru of Dasharath, he realized that Dasharath is in trouble. Vishwamitra Muni was angry. And he was walking out of the palace. And once he walks out, he cannot come back. So Vasishtha got up to pacify and to solve the problem. So many times, when a person is not able to handle his own problems, he needs assistance from somebody who is stable to assist and who is his well-wisher. Vasishtha realized that Dasharath is not able to handle his own problem. And therefore Vasishtha realized that I have to help Dasharath now. Till this point of time, Vasishtha was quiet, hoping that Dasharath would handle it. And now when he realized that Dasharath can't, Vasishtha interfered. Vasishtha started telling Dasharatha that just like a stream, a small stream, it flows into the river and the river flows into the ocean. Similarly, Ram has to now flow from the river of Ayodhya into the ocean of Vishwamitra's knowledge. Vasishtha told Dasharatha, don't be an impulsive father, but be a reflective father. He told Dasharatha that attachment, one's attachment, can prevent the growth of others, of the loved ones. And he says, he told Dasharatha that great people are bound to achieve great things. And no great thing can be achieved without making great sacrifices. So he told Dasharatha that, please send Ram and Vishwamitra Muni. In fact, you are concerned about the safety of Ram and therefore you want to retain him in Ayodhya. I would tell you, Ram is more safer with Vishwamitra Muni than in Ayodhya. The reason is because Vishwamitra Muni is a powerful sage who has knowledge of so many powerful weapons and mantras. And if Ram goes with Vishwamitra Muni, Vishwamitra Muni will surely hand over these mantras and these powerful missiles to Lord Ram, and they will, and Vishwamitra Muni will protect Ram. So the conclusion, this whole episode, of course, Dasharatha agreed to send Ram and Vishwamitra Muni. But the question is, who was right and who was wrong? Was Vasishtha right? Was Dasharatha right? Or was Vishwamitra right? Or were any of them wrong? The answer is that Vishwamitra Muni, he was right in the sense that he had the best intentions. He wanted to serve the world. He wanted to serve, facilitate the entire world. So he was right because he had the best intentions. But his problem was he had bad communication. He could not communicate his intentions properly. So Dasharatha, you know, the dialogue never continued. Dasharatha, he was right because he had a lot of love for Ram. But his problem was that the attachment that he had for Ram was impeding progress of Ram. And Vasishtha, he handled the situation in the right way. He communicated effectively. He told the same thing what Vishwamitra Muni was telling, but in a way that Dasharatha could understand. He spoke about how going with Vishwamitra Muni is actually an advantage for Ram. And Vasishtha, he didn't have a biased opinion. He was neutral. Therefore, he could help them nicely. Vasishtha, he helped Dasharatha see that in life, many times, there are higher plans that work. And when the plans of God work in our life, we should not try to change those plans. Life sometimes takes a turn. And when life takes a turn, we should not try to stop it. Just like a river, sometimes a river changes its course and enters and floods a village. When a river takes a turn, only a fool will try to stop the river. But a wise person will just helplessly see the river taking its turn and flooding. But when the river recedes, it leaves the land more fertile than what it was before. So, in life, we have to always see the positive in every negative situation that comes. Here, Vasishtha is trying to tell Dasharatha that one needs guidance and wisdom to be able to see the positive in apparently negative things that come in life. One time there was a man who was shipwrecked, and practically he almost lost his life, but somehow he got saved and he fell on an island, a desolate island, completely alone. And this man, he somehow got himself up and he started looking around the island, and he started looking for food, he started looking for some shelter. He built a small hut for himself and he started living in that island for many months. And every day he would go out to fetch some food for himself, and he was living in the island alone. One day when he came back from looking for his food, when he came back, he saw that the small hut that he had made for himself, it had caught fire, and the whole hut was burning. This man lost his mind. He started cursing God. He said, "My dear God, what is this? First of all, I lost everything in the shipwreck. And now the small hut that I had in the island, that also gone." In half an hour, a ship came by. And the people in the ship rescued him. And they told him, "We saw that smoke. And because we saw the smoke, we saw that somebody is there who needs help." Apparently, things that happen in our life, behind everything that happens in our life, there is a plan of God to bring us closer to Him. So here, Dasharatha, he had overplanned the future of Ram. And now when life took a turn, Dasharatha was trying to resist it. But Vasishtha convinced Dasharatha to let go and assist the plan of God. So finally, Dasharatha agreed to let Ram go, and Dasharatha, he sent for Ram to come. And he told Ram that he has to go with Vishwamitra Muni. The question now over here is that Ram never asked Dasharatha, why didn't you ask me before sending me? And nowadays youngsters, if you tell them to go somewhere, the first thing the youngsters ask is that, why didn't you ask me? You know, Ram over here, he was told by Dasharatha, you have to go with Vishwamitra Muni. Ram never asked any questions. Ram was just happy to follow. One of the things that Ram comes to teach the world is to have faith in superiors, faith in the words of the superior. So here, the lesson that we learned in this particular incident is that from the perspective of Ram, he had great faith in his superiors. But from the perspective of Dasharatha, it was a test. It was a test to the superior whether they are mature enough to make a decision for the welfare of their dependent. So Dasharatha, when he was handing over Ram to Vishwamitra Muni, he told, please take Ram and Lakshman. Now Vishwamitra Muni only asked for Ram, but Lakshman also is going along. Why? Because buy one, get one free. This offer started from Treta Yuga, you know. You buy Ram, you get the Lakshman also free. You know? So Lakshman and Ram cannot be separated. They are eternal associates, and they are always together. Wherever Ram goes, Lakshman also goes naturally along. Dasharatha, he told Vishwamitra Muni, when he handed over the children to Vishwamitra Muni, he told Vishwamitra Muni, that from today onwards, my dear sage, you're their mother and you're their father. Now, why did he say that you're their mother and father? Because he wanted to tell the sage that the sage now had to do two roles. He had to show the kindness of a mother and the protectiveness of the father. So the life of a sage generally is result oriented, but the life of a parent is love oriented. When a person is love oriented, you can handle lapses, you can handle mistakes that a person you love makes. But when a person is result oriented, you are only focusing on result, you don't care for the person. Therefore, Dasharatha was telling Vishwamitra Muni that, my dear sage, from today onwards, you are their mother and you are their father. Don't just think of yourself as a sage anymore. You are now a parent also, who has to excuse mistakes that the children make. And then Dasharatha handed over Ram and Lakshman to Vishwamitra Muni. And Vishwamitra Muni took Ram and Lakshman and he was walking away. Dasharatha now was helplessly watching Ram and Lakshman walk away from his life, practically going further and further away. When Dasharatha was looking at Vishwamitra Muni and Ram and Lakshman walking away, Dasharatha felt as if his life was leaving him. He felt as if whatever he had in his life was just going away. And Dasharatha was actually crying. So essentially, one man's gain is always another man's loss. When you do good to others, you don't necessarily experience happiness, but you experience satisfaction. Dasharatha sent Ram and Lakshman away. He was not happy about it, but he was satisfied that he was serving a higher purpose. So many times in life, we need to remove the anchor of attachment to actually progress in life. We need to learn to let go to be able to go ahead in life. Many times our attachments are so strong that our attachments act as our greatest impediments in progressing in life. One time there was a very wealthy man. He was driving a very expensive car and he was just going at full speed. And he went at such a speed that somehow he hit an old man and he killed him practically. Hit away and he was thrown in another direction. And when he was going further, he banged into another car. And practically this man, he fell out of his car. His car was completely damaged, big accident. And when he fell out of the car, he was bleeding all over. People came running to him and they saw that this man was sitting on the ground and crying. They asked him, why are you crying? This man said, my brand new, such an expensive car is broken. They said, you fool, you killed one old man over there. On top of that, you damaged another car. But more than anything else, you have lost your right hand. Your right hand has gone away, you know. He didn't even realize that he had lost his right hand. This man, when he heard that he lost his right hand, he started crying even more. He said, my Rolex watch also is gone, you know. Now, what is a Rolex watch, what is a car compared to his life? Sometimes attachments make you blind. And sometimes attachments make you do such embarrassing things that they actually prevent you from progressing in life. Dasharath, he learned to let go of his attachments because he wanted him to help Ram and Lakshman progress in their life. Now, Ram and Lakshman, for the first time in their life, they're going away and alone with Vishwamitra Muni outside their kingdom. It was an exciting trip for them, you know. Young boys, generally, they always look for some adventure, you know. The first time they're going alone without their parents. So they were quite excited. They wanted to know so much. Practically, Ram and Lakshman were asking Vishwamitra Muni so many questions about the whole journey. Every small nook and corner, they were asking questions. And because the mood was of a submissive inquiry, Vishwamitra Muni was constantly answering their questions. After walking about 8 miles, Ram and Lakshman both were looking very tired. And Vishwamitra Muni looked at the faces of Ram and Lakshman and he realized that both of them are tired. So then he told Ram to go and have a bath in a river and come back. And then Vishwamitra Muni offered Ram 2 mantras. The 2 mantras that Vishwamitra Muni offered Ram were Bala and Ati Bala mantras. The power of these 2 mantras was such that anybody who chants these mantras, they practically become fatigueless. They never get exhausted. They never get fever. They never get sick. They never actually die. And more than anything else, their body becomes lustrous and powerful. No weapons can harm them. Now, some people, whenever I speak this about Bala Nati Bala mantras, people ask me after the class, Prabhuji, what is the mantra? Can you tell me? Very useful in today's world, you know. You can be fatigueless, you can be feverless, you know. People love that. But unfortunately, the Vedic mantras, it is not just a question of competence to be able to utter the mantras and use them, but it requires character. And it's so the Vedic mantras always work more based on character than based on competence. So when Vishwamitra Muni gave this mantras to Ram, the Bala Nati Bala mantras, Ram gave these 2 mantras to Lakshman. It's very interesting that Vishwamitra Muni never gave this mantra directly to Lakshman. You know why? The reason is because Lakshman would never have accepted that. He would never have preferred that. Because if Vishwamitra Muni gave the mantra directly to Lakshman, then Ram and Lakshman would become equals. They would both become disciples of Vishwamitra Muni. Lakshman would never want that. And by Ram giving the mantra to Lakshman, it was certified that Ram was his guru. Ram was his teacher. Ram was his master. So, Vishwamitra Muni, internally he was thinking, when he was offering these mantras to Ram and Lakshman, that these mantras, the first time in Vishwamitra's life, he was actually sharing. Essentially, everything that Vishwamitra had, all the knowledge in this world, belongs to God. It's not that we have some extra knowledge that God doesn't have. It's not that God is coming to us for some scientific education or something. Every knowledge that we have essentially comes from God. Vishwamitra Muni was offering these mantras to Ram. At that point of time, he was feeling exactly how when a person goes to Ganga and offers the water of Ganga back to Ganga, what is the best thing you can offer Mother Ganga? The water of the Ganga itself. So Vishwamitra Muni was feeling exactly like that. He was offering the knowledge that he got from God back to God. Essentially, what is the meaning of aarti? When we offer the aarti ceremony, when we offer lamp, we offer incense, we offer flowers, we offer so many things to the Lord, what is essentially the meaning of it? These rituals on an external level, it seems to be very non-scientific, but actually there is a very deep science behind these rituals. The aarti ceremony essentially means that every ingredient of this world, earth, water, fire, air, ether, the mind, intelligence, the false ego, we are offering all that, all the 8 ingredients, the 8 elements of this world back to God. When we offer the flowers, incense, we are offering the earth element to God. When we offer the water, we are offering the water element to God. When we offer chamar, we are offering air element to God. When we blow the conch, we are offering the ether element to God. When we are actually contemplating with our intelligence, we are offering the intelligence to God. When we are offering obeisances in front of God, we are offering a false ego to God. And when we are thinking about the process of what is the purpose behind the aarti, you're actually offering a mind to God. So essentially, by just doing the aarti ceremony, you're offering all the elements of the world back to God, because He's the one who created them. So essentially over here, Vishwamitra Muni was offering what belonged to God back to God. But it's very interesting that as soon as Ram received these mantras, Ram began to serve Vishwamitra Muni, because now Vishwamitra Muni was officially his guru, officially his teacher. So Ram, he started serving Vishwamitra Muni in a very menial and humble way. When blessings are given, the traditional times, when blessings were given, the teacher or the person who is blessing would always say, Vijayi Vinayi Bhava. Vijayi means may you be victorious. But along with being victorious, be humble also. And therefore, it is explained that service to teacher, it dilutes the acidic pride of knowledge. When you serve great teachers, it actually dilutes the pride that you have in acquiring that knowledge. And therefore, in today's world, we need to learn to become humble. When we become proud of God, we become humble. But to the extent that we are proud of ourselves, we cannot be proud of God, because we don't attract the grace of God. So how does one protect oneself from false pride? The way you protect yourself from false pride is by giving credit to others. When you give credit to others, then you feel satisfied. But when you take credit, you can actually never be satisfied. In today's world, people love to take credit even for things that they don't do. And this is one of the diseases in today's world. And therefore, pride is just increasing more and more and more. It is explained that when you take credit, when you praise yourself, self-praise is like drinking salt water. When you drink salt water, purpose of drinking water is to quench your thirst. But when you drink salt water, you become more thirsty. So when you praise yourself, when you take credit for yourself, you actually become more hungry for more credit, more hungry for more praise. But when you actually learn to give credit to others, it's like drinking fresh water. You become very satisfied by doing that. So in this world, everything is upside down. In today's world, people don't want to talk about humility, because humility is considered to be a sign of weakness. And people want to talk about being proud, because being proud is considered to be a sign of strength, you know, sign of confidence, self-confidence. So essentially, there is a very interesting understanding of the law of gravity, you know. Law of gravity from a spiritual angle and from a material angle are totally different. In the spiritual angle, the law of gravity is, in the material angle, what is law of gravity? Law of gravity is that whatever something is on top, it is thrown, it falls down. That is law of gravity in the material angle. But in the spiritual angle, the law of gravity is that when anyone who feels himself very low, such a person is pulled up. That is spiritual law of gravity. In material law of gravity, whoever is on top falls down. And in spiritual law of gravity, whoever is down, the lowermost, goes up. So essentially, that is how we understand humility. Here, at this point of time in the story, we come to a very interesting point in the story. This point in the story teaches us the first law of progressive living. The title of today and tomorrow's session is known as Laws of Progressive Living. I'm going to discuss seven laws, and each law comes to the end of one story. There are seven stories that we will be discussing today and tomorrow, and the law teaches us what we learned from that particular story. So here we come to the first law, which is known as the law of sharing. The law of sharing essentially states that sharing multiplies loving relationships and frees one from loneliness. The pride of knowledge keeps one isolated. Till now, Vishwamitra Muni was isolated from the world. He was actually not accessible to anyone in the world. He was living alone in the jungles, in the forests, and practically he was never, you know, connected with people. First time, Vishwamitra Muni, he is learning to share his knowledge with Ram and Lakshman. The law of sharing, essentially, it acts as a bridge which helps us cross the waters of frustration from the island of pride, and it takes us to the mainland garden of love. So essentially, Vishwamitra Muni was always living a lonely life. He was filling himself up with lot of knowledge, but all that knowledge that he was filling himself up with, he never shared with the world. He never ever gave that knowledge to anybody in the world. First time Vishwamitra Muni was sharing his knowledge with Ram and Lakshman by giving them the Bala Nati Bala Mantras. So, in fact, Vishwamitra Muni, when he sees that Ram is so grateful and he is in such a right mood, he offers him a lot of missiles the next day, a lot of knowledge the next day, all kinds of varieties of missiles that are described in the Ramayana. It is explained that a well that is not used, it begins to stink. After some time, when the well is not used at all, it begins to stink. And therefore, the only way the well can be used properly is by sharing it. When the well is not used at all, it stinks and it becomes useless after some time. But when you keep using the water of the well more and more and more, it remains fresh and it remains always filled up. So long Vishwamitra Muni was only filling himself up. First time he was experiencing the joy of giving. And then that's when he realized that the joy of giving is more than the joy of taking. Scriptures talk about two words, Kripana and Brahmana. The word Kripana means somebody who is a miser, and the word Brahmana means the one who is very liberal. So Kripana means somebody who never uses what he has. Whatever he has, he keeps with himself only, never uses with the world. Such a person is called as Kripana. In fact, it is said that a miser is the best donor, because he donates everything he has when he dies. He doesn't use anything. So one time there was a very miserly man, you know, and he was drowning. He was drowning in the river. This man, never in his life he had ever given anything. And this man, he was drowning in the river. And he was shouting, "Help, help, please help me." So there was one man who was in a boat. He went next to this man and he said, "Give me your hand." This man, he didn't give his hand to me. This man said, "Come on, I want to save you, give me your hand." He's not giving his hand. Then finally he realized that this fellow is a miser. He said, "Take my hand." Immediately he went and got the hand. You know? So much not used to the concept of giving. You know? It is said, human life is compared to a cough syrup. Human life is compared to a cough syrup. In every cough syrup bottle, there is an expiry date, you know, written. So human life always has an expiry date. So we have to learn to use the human life in the best possible way in the duration in which we last. Therefore, when we learn to share what we have with the world, we actually benefit and we actually uplift society in a tangible way. This brings us to the next story. It's very interesting. Now, Ram and Lakshman are exhausted at the end of the day. Long journey. And finally, Vishwamitra Muni, he decides to take a break in that particular place. And Ram and Lakshman lie down to go to sleep. The three of them, Vishwamitra Muni, Ram and Lakshman, are lying down together. The first time, Ram and Lakshman are sleeping on the hard floor. All their life, they have been used to the luxuries and comforts of the palace. The bed of Ram is explained to be as soft as foam. You can imagine a bed being as soft as foam. So he is used to such luxury, and now over here he is with Vishwamitra Muni, and Vishwamitra Muni is not that he is carrying a blanket and a pillow and a, you know, bed, you know, for all these people. He is just walking scot-free, you know, absolutely. Lesser the baggage, like better it is for him. So they are lying on the floor, on the grassy floor of the forest. Ram and Lakshman don't complain. A good leader is trained to be flexible. Somebody who always complains, he always finds something missing in life, you know. The mind is such a thing that if you are not used to being satisfied, it will find some defect, something not there, you know. Nowadays you find youngsters, when they are given something to eat, they find salt is not here, they find this food is not good, that food is not good. The mind is constantly complaining, because the nature of the mind is to be always dissatisfied. But the nature of good leadership is to learn to be flexible and happy with whatever is there. So here Ram and Lakshman, they just happily slept on the floor. And Vishwamitra Muni, he was thinking, what can I give them to make them more comfortable? So Vishwamitra Muni started speaking sweet words of affection. Because he realized soothing words of love are more gratifying than luxuries that are given without love. I tell you, whenever I travel, there are different types of things that you get to eat, you know. But food that you get to eat, which is cooked with a lot of love and devotion, nothing better than that, you know. You eat in 5-star events, you know, you eat in the best of places, you know. The kind of experience that you have in eating food that is cooked very with a lot of love and care, there's nothing better than that. Just imagine you're eating, you go to somebody's house and, you know, somebody gives you a plate filled with 10 items, all cooked with ghee, you know, really nice looking items. And they put the plate in front of you and they say, eat. I know that you're a hungry dog. Eat as much as you want. Now, what is the inspiration for you to eat that? The best food, the most luxurious food. But the inspiration to eat doesn't come from the food itself, but it comes from the love in which the food is given, right? So here, Vishwamitra Muni didn't have much to offer Ram and Lakshman. He could not offer comforts, luxuries, but what he could offer was soothing words. So this was the first time in the life of Vishwamitra that Vishwamitra was speaking with so much love and so much tenderness with children, with youngsters. Vishwamitra was a hardcore ascetic, a hardcore sage. All his life, he has always lived his life of hardness, toughness. The first time, he's expressing his soft side to Ram and Lakshman. The lesson that we learn is that every human being has a soft side to him. But unfortunately, the desire to project yourself as a tough person, it makes you think that the expression of the soft side is a weakness. And therefore, many people, you know, never express their soft side. They only show themselves to be tough people. Here Vishwamitra Muni, first time in his life, he was expressing himself, the soft side of himself. Why? Because he was talking to young boys who have nothing to give and take, analyzing him, analyzing his behavior. So, the whole night passes in this way, and Ram and Lakshman, they are fast asleep. Next day, early in the morning, Vishwamitra gets up early. And as soon as he gets up, he goes and does his morning rituals. And then he comes back and he finds that Ram and Lakshman are still sleeping. So, he looks at the face of the sleeping Ram and Lakshman. The first time in the life of Vishwamitra Muni, he is watching the sleeping face of Ram. And for the first time, he finds some emotions rising in his heart that he has never ever faced before. He experiences the raw emotion of bhakti, of devotion. The beauty of the face of the Lord when he just wakes up in the morning is the most amazing experience. Therefore, Mangal Arati is considered to be the most auspicious time of the day because the Lord has just gotten up. And therefore, it is said that, you know, that experience of connecting with the Lord just when he wakes up is the most sweet experience because he's in the most magnanimous mood at that point of time. And also, more than that, the beauty of the Lord's face is the most beautiful early in the morning, the first thing in the morning. And therefore, it is said that Darshanarthi, or during the day when you have Darshan of the deity, is elaborately dressed. It is like the Lord coming to the courtroom. But Mangalarthi is like we going to the bedroom of the Lord and having a very intimate experience. You know, generally, when you go to people's houses, you don't get to go to the bedroom directly. You sit in the hall, you know. So for most people, when they have Darshan of the deities, they get to sit in the hall only. But for special people who are very close to the Lord, they get to go to the bedroom of the Lord, Mangalarthi. But for that, you have to get up early in the morning, you know. In today's world, who likes to see a person when he gets up in the morning? The face of a sleeping person is obnoxious to look at, you know. In fact, you know, whenever I travel around, you know, and I see people when they get up in the morning, they're so embarrassed to show their face, you know. They quickly run to the bathroom and they wash their face. Because the beauty of a person early in the morning is not really good. But here Vishwamitra Muni is looking at the face of Lord Ram and he's so attracted to the face of the beauty of Lord Ram's face. And he actually contemplates and begins thinking of Mother Kaushalya, who is the mother of Lord Ram and who gets to experience this beauty of Ram every day. Vishwamitra is experiencing this beauty of Ram only first time in so many years, and Mother Kaushalya is so fortunate that every day she gets to experience this beauty. And Vishwamitra Muni, remembering Mother Kaushalya, he starts singing the praise of Mother Kaushalya. And he sings this verse. He says, Kaushalya Supraja Rama Purva Sandhya Pravartate Uttishta Narsha Ardola Kartavyam Deva Manikam. This is a part of the Vishnu Sahasranam. But the Acharya has explained that when he utters this verse, you know, when he is chanting this verse, Kaushalya Supraja Rama, when he utters the word Kaushalya, the mother's name, the mother of Lord Ram, he goes into ecstasy. And because he is praising the devotion of Mother Kaushalya so much, he goes into ecstasy. That practically for almost an hour, Vishwamitra Muni is only chanting the name of Mother Kaushalya. And after 1 hour, he completes the remaining of the verse, you know. So essentially, at this point of time, he is worshipping Mother Kaushalya. This is something very unique in Vishwamitra's life. Because in the path of devotion, you can see the greatness of others, and you can see the lack of your own greatness. In the path of austerities, you are crippled by the feeling of your own greatness, and you bask in self-glory. All these years in Vishwamitra's life, he has been an ascetic. He has been an austere person, and he has always been thinking about his own greatness only. That's what the path of asceticism does. But here, for the first time, he is experiencing the emotion of bhakti, and the first thing that the emotion of bhakti does is it creates dependence on others. It creates the ability to see the greatness of others. Only when you see the greatness of others, and only when you see that you have so many shortcomings, you can actually progress in devotion. This brings us to the second law, which is known as the law of dependence. The law of dependence essentially states that one's real strength lies in realizing the strength of others and God. When you actually accept higher powers in your life, you actually practice the law of dependence. First time in the life of Vishwamitra Muni, he was practicing the law of dependence. All these years in Vishwamitra's life, he has always been depending on his own powers, his own abilities, his own strength. But the first time he's seeing the strength of somebody else, he's seeing the greatness of Mother Kaushalya, and he's actually worshipping her with his heart. And here, he's actually seeing and understanding that when you learn to depend on others, seeing their greatness, you get a power to do something wonderful. One time, this is a true story that happened many years back, and this story always fascinates me. This story was about a man who was working as a priest, and one night he was having a celebration, you know, and the whole night he had to be awake and he had to be attending to certain duties. So he was trying to call his wife and tell her that I'm not going to come home tonight. He was calling her one time, two times, five times, 10 times, 20 times, just not picking up the phone. So he was, you know, disturbed in one sense, but he didn't know what to do. So he decided the next day I'll go and deal with her. So the next day morning, before he actually went to his wife, he went to his wife and he asked her that, you know, why didn't you pick up the phone that I was calling you so many times? The wife said, what phone? I don't got any call. So he was completely bewildered. He saw her phone. There was actually no call. So he went back to the, to his duties the next day. And the next day when he went back, one man came running to him. He fell at his feet and he started telling him, thank you, my dear sir, you saved my life yesterday. So this man said, how did I save your life? He said, I'll tell you my story. Yesterday night, the whole city was celebrating a festival, and I was desperate. I was lost actually. And I was so disappointed that I was thinking of committing suicide. And this man, he said, I actually had hung a noose from a fan, and I put it on my neck. And just when I put the noose on my neck, I made a prayer to God. And I prayed to God that, my dear Lord, I don't want to die. But I don't see a reason to live also. If you want me to live, send me a sign. Send me a signal that I should live. Then I will live. And exactly when he finished praying, the phone rang. His mobile phone rang. And you know, the mobile always rings at the wrong time, you know. So this man was thinking, what now, you know? Who is calling me at this point of time, you know? This man, he just neglected it. But it kept ringing for a long period of time. This man said, if somebody is so desperate to talk to me, he must be thinking that I am important. So he got on and said, let me attend the last call. And he went and saw the phone, and the caller ID on the phone shocked him. It was written, God calling. Because he had stored the number of that priest as God. The priest was calling his wife. But somehow a disconnection happened and it dialed the solo. And that this man, when he saw that God calling, he said, God wants me to live. And the next day he came and ran at the feet of this priest. And actually, this is a sign of dependence. When we learn to take care of higher powers, something mysterious happens. And things happen in a way that you never understand how it happens. Therefore, whenever you find you are in a problem which logic and reasoning cannot solve, that is a time to take shelter of a higher power. And that is a time when we recall the law of dependence. So, Vishwamitra Muni, he woke up Ram and Lakshman and he told them that let's go ahead and we have to perform our duties. So he said, Kaushalya Supraja Rama Purva Sandhya Pravartate. He said, my dear Ram, the sun has arisen in the east already. Get up. And he says, Purva Sandhya Pravartate Uttishta Narashardula. He said, Uttishta means get up. Narashardula means you are a lion among human beings, you are a tiger among human beings. So as a leader, you have to set a standard. So if you get up late, then others will get up late also, you know. So he said, you have to set the standard. Uttishta Narashardula Kartavyam Devamanikam. He said, you have to get up and perform duties that are ordained for human beings. So he was inspiring Ram to get up and perform his duties. So in life, each and every one of us needs inspiration. In fact, in life, everything goes down. And that is the nature of this world today. The natural instincts of a human being is to forget one's responsibilities and become lazy. And the job of a guide is to inspire the lethargic mind to focus on the goal. So, when we need to flow against the current, we need to put more effort. Spiritual life, it's like swimming in a river. If you stop swimming, you will go down. The current will take you downwards. But if you want to go higher, you have to flow against the current, you have to put effort, right? So similarly, in life, we always find occasions and situations where we lose inspiration. That is the time we have to realize that for us to grow in life, for us to go ahead in life, we need to live life with determination. The bumblebee has a structure. The bodily structure of the bumblebee is such that the wings of the bumblebee cannot support its body weight. Mathematically, it is not possible for the bumblebee to fly. But fortunately, the bumblebee doesn't understand maths. But the bumblebee is determined to fly. And the determination of this bumblebee to fly helps it overcome its limitations. So similarly, when you are determined, you actually attract higher powers. And you grow much faster. So, at this point of time, I would like to just stop and conclude whatever we spoke today. We'll resume tomorrow. I started speaking about the story of Dasharath having a desire to marry Lord Ram. And then we spoke about the lesson that we learned is how invisible opportunities keep coming in life. And we consider many of these invisible opportunities to be obstacles. The guard, he comes and he starts judging Vishwamitra Muni. We spoke about how external packaging and versus internal content. So the guard was looking at Vishwamitra Muni from an external point of view, but Dasharath and all the ministers is looking at the content of Vishwamitra Muni. Then we spoke about Dasharath glorifying Vishwamitra Muni and Vishwamitra Muni asking two questions to Dasharath Maharaj. And we saw how these two questions were the perfect model for good governance. And we saw how Dasharath, he speaks over enthusiastically. And we spoke about how words are like unretractable arrows. They have to be chosen before being spoken. Then we spoke about the clash between Vishwamitra Muni and Dasharath's vision, which was the clash between love and growth. And we saw how Vishwamitra Muni gets angry and how he uses anger constructively. Then we saw Vasishta, he helps Dasharath to make a decision. He helps Dasharath see the plan of God and align himself with the plan of God. And then finally we saw how Dasharath let go Ram and Lakshman, and we learned the lesson of how one has to remove the anchor of attachment to progress in life. And then we saw how Vishwamitra Muni takes Ram and Lakshman and gives them the knowledge of the missiles and of the Bala Nati Bala mantras. And we saw how Ram acquired the knowledge, but he was humble in serving Vishwamitra Muni. We saw how there has to be humility to be able to learn properly. And then we saw from the story of Vishwamitra learning to share his knowledge with Lord Ram, we saw the law of sharing. And then from the story of Vishwamitra Muni's softer side, when he is expressing his dependence on the greatness of others, when he is recognizing the greatness of Mother Kaushalya, we learn the law of dependence. So we'll continue seeing the other five laws tomorrow, and if possible I will also speak the story of Ahilya, the deliverance of Ahilya. So I'll just essentially tell you what is going to happen tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to speak about the five laws, and Krishna willing, time permitting, the story of Ahilya also. And then on day 3, which is Sunday, we will speak the story of the marriage of Sita and Ram. And we'll listen to many lessons on relationships through the story of Sita and Ram. And that is the progress in the next 2 days that we will be doing. Very grateful to all of you all for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. I am very happy and honored to be here in Mauritius. Very grateful to the leaders of ISKCON Mauritius, Ajay Chaitanya Prabhu, Acharya Ratna Prabhu, and all the other devotees who helped to organize this, Varada Krishna Prabhu. I am very grateful to each and every one of you all for having come here and attending these sessions. I also like to tell you all that tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, in case you would like to call your friends, relatives, family members, you are most welcome to. They will get the benefit of the next 2 sessions. You understand what the type of session, the kind of content that you are going to hear tomorrow and after tomorrow. So if you feel that you would like to have others benefited by this, you are most welcome. Also, for those who are not aware of this, we are organizing a competition called the Gita Champions League. It is a competition of studying the Bhagavad Gita. As we know that the Gita is one of the most fundamental literatures of the Vedic culture, and the essence of the entire Gita is presented in a very interesting contest called Gita Champions League. Those who want to know more about this contest can contact at the back, and we also have registrations for this. But the most amazing thing in this contest is that you are studying the Gita, but you are also earning money, or you are earning gifts, So many people need inspiration. We ended by talking about how for everything we need inspiration in life. So Vishwamitra Muni was trying to inspire Ram and Lakshman to get up and perform their duties. So similarly in our lives also, to be able to study the Gita, to be able to motivate to understand the Gita, we need some inspiration. Unfortunately, we need some really solid inspiration to study Gita. So we are creating that inspiration in the form of this contest. Those who are attracted by prizes, and those who are attracted by the possibility of winning competition, you are most welcome to register. Even if you don't win the competition, you will win your life for sure, So with that, I would like to end over here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.